I'm Carol Cohn, and welcome to Purpose 360, the podcast that unlocks the power of purpose to ignite business and social impact. Today's conversation is a deep dive into the social impact of a B2B company, GAF. You might know GAF because they are North America's largest roofing and waterproofing manufacturer. They've protected homes, businesses, families, and communities for over 130 years through its innovative and customer-driven solutions. GAF's company purpose: protect what matters most. Andy Hilton, their chief communications officer and chief CSR officer, is joining me today to talk about the company's purpose and how he and his team developed their social impact initiatives to tie in beautifully and to authentically grow from what the company does so well. It protects what matters most. We're going to get into a discussion about how do you find perfect partners? Well, not perfect partners, but the best partners. How do you manage the relationship to make sure it's not check writing, but it's true engagement? How do you bring resiliency to life, which is so much a part of what roofing is about? Resiliency in workforces, resiliency in structures, resiliency in families. And how do you address, which is such a problem that we hear with our clients, how do I take my purpose and bring it down to the manufacturing floor? Well, GAF has over 30 plants in over 26 communities in the United States, and having an engaged employee population in an authentic way is absolutely critical to their business. So join me for this highly insightful conversation with a dear friend, Andy Hilton. You're going to learn a lot. So let's get started. So welcome to the show, Andy.
Carol, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
One of the reasons I'm so delighted is that Andy and I, in our careers, have had the wonderful opportunity to work together twice. And what I really, we worked with on Xylem and on an amazing global water project. And then I love the fact that when Andy went to GAF, that he was there a couple weeks, maybe a month, and he rang me up. And he said, hey, I really want to talk to you about doing some very special work together. And we did for, I think, about a couple years. And so today he's going to really share with us the company's purpose, how it ties into their social purpose, the kind of work that they are doing truly on the ground and making a tremendous difference. And this is a company, first of all, that a quarter of the country has a GAF roof. And I know that when I had to do my roof on my house in Cape Cod, I had Timberline shingles, and they were from GAF. So let's just start. Andy, who is GAF?
Well, Carol, first of all, thanks for having me. Thanks for being a great partner over the years. And thank you also for being a customer of GAF's. All of those are very important to me.
There you go.
So GAF, we're the North America's largest roofing manufacturer. So we sell roofing material for both commercial and residential roofs. And so, as you mentioned, we're one in four roofs in America are covered by GAF products, and we're really proud of that. We take that responsibility to cover and provide shelter and for American families very seriously. And as you said, it feeds it directly into our work around our brand promise and our social purpose too. So grateful to be here, and thanks for the opportunity to share our story.
So let's just talk a little bit about Andy Hilton. So you've had a really storied career, great career with great companies, truly helping them to live their values in action. So just talk a little bit about your history and why is this important to you personally? And then why is it important to business today to truly live their purpose, live their values?
Yeah, I've had a very fortunate to have a really wonderful career in the communications and now in the social impact profession. I started my career in agency life. Came across, you know, Carol and your agencies and many different iterations over the years. Through my time with both Ketchum and Peppercom, but then I found my way to ITT, and that's where we first met. In ITT, which later became Xylem following a spinoff, was an organization that was at an inflection point when I joined in terms of trying to define what its purpose was, right? What its brand promise was. And under the leadership of a mutual friend, Tom Martin, you know, we landed in a place on an idea which at the time we called Engineered for Life. It's still the tagline and the promise of ITT today. That's really where where we started thinking about our social impact programs around that central idea and how can we bring that idea of Engineered for Life, you know, to life through social impact programs. And Tom retired and then Angela Bonacore came in, and that's where you and I got to work together. I was in the backseat at the time with Angela's car, and I think you were riding shotgun with her as we built out the Watermark program initially. You know, and then when ITT spun off into three separate independent public companies, I had the great fortune of staying with Xylem, which was the water business, and naturally, given the focus of the Watermark program on water issues, the Watermark program, the social impact program, came with Xylem, and it was at that point where that program and that experience really taught me a tremendous amount about how a great focused strategic social impact program that's born from an organization's kind of brand promise, from its core values, what it can do in terms of helping an organization connect with stakeholders, connect with employees, connect with customers, and in so many unique and meaningful ways. And so I had the great privilege of seeing that program develop under Angela's leadership and with your great support and your team's great support. When I had the opportunity to go to GAF, join GAF, I was finding GAF was in the similar spot that ITT was in terms of, it was in a transformative state, really thinking about what, this very successful business and how is it going to continue to stay relevant and grow in the future. And it was a very introspective moment. And this is only 4 years ago. There's a number of great new leaders coming into GAF at the same time, who collectively sat back and looked at what is the promise of this organization, what does make us unique, and that's what led us to the brand promise of GAF, which is to protect what matters most. And so, when the organization landed on that idea as the anchor for everything we stand for, it brought me right back to those days at ITT, and I said to myself, this is the perfect time to really think about how we bring that story to life through a high impact social impact program. So, that's what kind of brought us to the doorstep of our conversation today.
And so why is it important? Now, you're talking 4 years ago when we started talking about this for GAF. Why have you seen it to become more important for companies today truly to stand for something beyond the bottom line and to find the very authentic alignment with their business and society?
It's a great question. I don't know that it's any more important today. I just think that there's a greater awareness to the value that it can create. It's always been important. I have to believe it's always been important. We try to think about people in kind of generational buckets and say things are more or less important to them at any given time. And I believe that to an extent, but not but not entirely. I think, again, I think these things, these, you know, people have always wanted to have, to feel connected to something bigger than themselves. It's, I think it's an idea as old as time. The fact that we've brought that into the zeitgeist of how we run businesses and how we make decisions. I think that is certainly changed over the last, you know, two decades. And so we are in a different time from that perspective, but I think the core notions, right, the core tenets of purpose are just as relevant today as they were, you know, 100 years ago.
That's a really good point. So protect what matters most, is your corporate brand. It's your essence. And you decided that you wanted to develop this community social impact initiative, but you felt very strongly you wanted employees to have their voice in the co-creation. Why was that important? And what was the process that you did get the employee voice, especially, and I have to give you a lot of kudos, going down to the plant level? Because I remember we ran some workshops in some of your communities. And so why was that so important to get their input?
Yeah, for sure. And let me back up and first, you know, sort of give credit where credit is due. It was our CEO, Jim Schnepper, who, when bringing me into the organization, you know, made establishing a CSR strategy and a social impact program kind of mission number one, right? So he understood the value of this work through, in terms of how we can really build the brand and engage with our stakeholders in a way that GAF has not historically done, and in doing so, it would support the transformation that he was leading. So I want to make sure that I give credit where credit is due there.
I love the fact that you talked about Jim leading transformation, because I think it's also important for our listeners to know that you don't sell per se directly to consumer. You do in Home Depot and such, but you have this very large network of contractors. And so you've got multiple stakeholders. And so can you talk a little bit about Jim's vision for transforming the company, making it even more important to its core stakeholders?
When thinking about how we were going to, or how we are going to continue to lead, and not only continue to lead, but to continue to grow, you know, past beyond where the organization is today, you know, there's a keen understanding of our relationships, our ability to connect with contractors and connect with more contractors and build, you know, establish loyalty with these contractors who are in the homes. They're the ones who are trusted, right? When they're the ones who are knocking your door, you let them in, and they're talking to you about, you know, a very, very important asset to their family, which is the roof that covers their heads. And so the more of those contractors that we can, you know, the more high quality contractors that we can engage and connect with and build loyalty with is going to, you know, is going to help us to grow the business. We're going to get better insights into what customers are seeking, homeowners are seeking. We're going to get, you know, we're going to be more trusted to provide, you know, those essential products to homeowners through that important channel. And so so recognizing that our ability to build, you know, meaningful relationships with contractors and extend and broaden that network was critical. And I want to come back to sort of the role of the employee too in all of this. You know, there's another insight that Jim and then our leadership have, which is, you know, we're only going to be able to achieve our success if we're able to bring, right, the employee population along with us on this journey. And if they can see themselves as something, part of something, you know, bigger than just, you know, a manufacturer of roofing shingles, right, or single ply membranes that go on top of commercial buildings, you know, if they see that there's a larger purpose to what we're trying to do, they're going to be more loyal, they're going to be more engaged. And we, you know, in a market where talent has always been scarce, and good talent has been even more scarce, then this is this is another area of real opportunity for us, which is, you know, to think about how do we think about our stakeholders and all their specific and unique needs, and what it takes to engender loyalty among each of them.
And I remember that as part of the process, in addition to employees and really getting their feedback, you also, we did interviews with your senior leadership. You presented to your executive leadership team. And truly, you were getting a lot of positive feedback to your point, which is this is something we need to do. Is there a story at all or just an anecdote that when you were presenting to your to the leadership team that you were either concerned about it or they got it instantly?
I wish I could recall, you know, some sort of fantastical moment where it all came to be. But I think what's really interesting and what was so unique for me in this experience with GAF was, you know, it was at the point, it was actually more around when the organization was aligning around the brand promise of we protect what matters most. And, you know, I've been in organizations that have around organizations that have, you know, searched for, right, those magic few words that sort of summarize eloquently their purpose and their intention and their promise to their stakeholders. And for many organizations, it's a chore, and it involves, you know, years and years of research. It involves, you know, thousands and thousands of interviews. It involves you know, lots of hand wringing and self reflection. And it you never quite get there. You never get to a place where everyone feels connected to the idea. We were very fortunate because, again, I think the nature of the products that we make and what we do for families and businesses made it when we landed on that idea, we protect what matters most. And again, not my idea, but when the organization got there, everyone instantly aligned to the notion. They could see themselves. They could see what we do, not only for homeowners and from a product perspective, but for contractors. Right, our contractors. Everything that we do for contractors is about what matters most to them, which is their reputation. Right, our programs and our services, you know, out in the field to help them build their reputation on the backs of great products, but giving them the tools to succeed in the home. You know, when we think about our communities, right, what matters most in our communities, and we are present in, you know, nearly 30, you know, communities across the country manufacturing our products. You know, in each of those communities, what matters most is something different. It's not the same thing for them. So really understanding, you know, what it is that we invested in getting to know what our communities needed. And we'll get maybe into some of those examples a little bit later in this conversation. So, you know, it was when we landed on that idea, everything else clicked. Once we landed on that idea, then we said, okay, well, how do we bring this to life? It was easy through the programs that we were already running for our customers, through the products that we were already making. It checked. How do we deliver that in our communities? Right. That's where the notion of community matters and our social impact program, where that when we were presenting that and sharing that, similar to, I think, that the notion of we protect what matters most was just something so obvious to people once they heard it. I think community matters as an outgrowth or as a complement, as a way to bring that story to life. It was obvious at the time that we presented it because it made so much sense.
It seems obvious, but I just want to make the statement for our listeners. You could say, GAF, we sell shingles, right? And when we went to the roofing show and, you know, your booth stood out just, you know, miles apart from anybody else, because it wasn't we sell shingles. It's we protect what matters most. And that was such a higher plane, and you could really feel the purpose, and you could see how you differentiated yourselves, and you could see the kind of conversations that you were having with your customers, with your roofers. And I love the fact that you also, because this is not done by a lot of B2B companies per se, you had a smaller booth right next door for Community Matters, and you had your CSR team there. And they were talking to roofers, they were talking to contractors, and that you were from the very beginning of Community Matters, you were integrating it in to the rest of your core purpose. And so, and I loved going to that show. I thought that was great. I had wonderful conversations. So let's just talk about the elements of Community Matters, because you focus on disaster resiliency, helping neighbors, and building community. So how did you choose those three pillars? And I want to talk a little bit about disaster relief before we talk about some of the work with Project for Public Spaces.
So with respect to, you know, the pillars of Community Matters, our program started from a point of view that resilient communities are sustainable communities, right? That you need, we wanted to be part of the solution with respect to building resilience in our communities, those communities where we work, the communities that we serve. And we think we can, by focusing our time and talents and our capabilities on discrete areas that will help build resiliency, is the area where we can have the biggest impact as an organization. So it started from the point of view, okay, so we know what we make, we know what we do, we know what we're really good at, we know where we are, we know what we have to commit. How do we package that together to maximize the impact? And so that was the sort of at the center of Community Matters. So we started as you just described, working in three kind of discrete areas: building community, helping neighbors, and disaster response. We've broadened that a little bit, or refined that even more recently, to really focus in on this notion of resiliency. If a strong, productive, available workforce, healthy, strong, engaged families, and strong infrastructure, buildings and homes that can protect your community. We think those are foundational areas for building resilience, and we think that those are the areas where GAF as an entity can have the biggest impact.
That's great, because I haven't heard about that. So talk to me about how you went from the physical actions. So I remember that there was Hurricane Florence, and that you had a plant in Burgaw, North Carolina, and it was flooded like crazy. And you had so many employees there, and you immediately went down, and Jim Schnepper was there, and you were there, and you were really trying to help everybody. So that was disaster response, absolutely extraordinary. But then you've gone to this higher level of resiliency. So how did that transition happen? Because I really love the construct of resilient workforces, resilient families, and resilient communities. So tell me how that transition happened.
It was an opportunity in a difficult situation for us to show up and bring this social impact program to life for the first time. And I think it taught us so much that I think led us, it was what is in our experience there certainly fed into how we continue to refine the program, seeing what the needs on the ground were at the time, right? And really, most importantly, seeing how those needs evolved over time, and seeing how those needs evolved well after the news cameras left, taught us an immense amount about what resiliency really means and how important it is if you're going to consider yourself active in the disaster response world. You need to be thinking well beyond that initial 48 hours, its initial 72 hours, when the needs are acute. They're very acute, and there's great organizations out there, including ours, who are supporting communities in that desperate time of need in the hours immediately following a disaster. But then there's the weeks and the follow where people are struggling to just get their homes accessible, right? Just to get be able to reach and then to a point where the insurance adjusters can get in and actually inspect the homes, and then moving into a rebuild phase where you're either rebuilding or you're fixing homes that have been damaged, through, and then how do you build those back in a way that's going to make them better, in the future, not just the same that was destroyed, and how do you help that community, prevent or avoid, future such disaster. So we learned a lot in Hurricane Florence. All of those learnings I think have translated into how we've matured the program and evolved the program over time.
There are many parts to Community Matters. I'm not going to ask you which is your favorite, because each one is great. So can you talk about the local community work, the work that was done, especially the Shafter project? And that's where you really looking for in your local plant communities. And I think it's really important for our listeners to know it wasn't the whole country. You can't afford to do the whole country. You really wanted to connect with your plant communities and your employees. So talk about that process, because it was in depth.
So my favorite part of Community Matters is it is our employees. It's the people that work for our company and how they've embraced the program and the opportunity that's been afforded to them to engage with their local communities. The most important thing we did was that we liberated or we gave permission to leaders in local communities to engage directly. And then in the case of Shafter, which is a great story, we supported that engagement from a central place so that we could learn along with the local community on how to do this well. So we came into with Community Matters, we do have an ambition to deliver on what we call internally signature projects, where we invest at a deep level in the communities in a meaningful way, in a way that meets the specific and unique needs of the communities where we operate. And we do it, entirely through an approach, a co-creation approach, and it's a model that was introduced to us through you and through a fantastic nonprofit, placemaking nonprofit, based out of New York City, that has done community engagement based place ID creation for many, many years. And so in Shafter, California, where we have two plants, we make glass mat, which is a core, the core of the laminate shingle. And then we have a shingle manufacturing plant also in Shafter. We've been there for many years. We haven't been as connected to the community in an intentional way, in a visible way, for the many decades, we were there before a couple of years ago. And really what the placemaking and what the approach did was it took multiple steps to getting at the right project at the right time, and engaging the right people to deliver on it so that it would have sustained impact in Shafter. And so it started with, basically introducing, GAF to the local business and nonprofit and community organizations to say, listen, we've been here a long time. We are essential, part of the fabric of this community. We want to be present in a more visible, meaningful way. And so we're here to listen and try to figure out where we as an organization can have the biggest impact. And so we had you were with us.
We had a listening tour.
But in that process, what was when I look back on it, what was fascinating or amazing is that was really also an opportunity for GAF to introduce itself,
right? Absolutely.
To really important, influential people in the community. And so we listened, and then that led us we also sat down with our employees in the plant, right? And we said, and we asked them, like, what was important to them? What did they think that the community needed? Where do they think that GAF as an entity could step up and have a make a big difference? And then that ultimately led us to the Shafter Learning Center and a great team there, led by a gentleman named David Franz, who's the director of the facility. And they had an ambition to grow their capabilities and their services to the Shafter community. Shafter is a very a significant ESL population, English as a second language population. The Learning Center provides additional educational opportunities for ESL families and others, to really help advance the educational goals of the broader Shafter community. But their space was limited. They were providing all this training out of a very small community library, and being California, we envisioned, we saw an opportunity to use a lot of the space, sort of inside and outside of the facility to enhance the capabilities and the services. We've identified an acute need for the community. How do we envision the space? How do we create the space? And that was where Project for Public Spaces comes in, and they helped us design some community engagement activities where we brought the citizens, the residents of Shafter together for a celebration on one hand, to say, hey, we're here. We want to make this facility great, and we want your input into what this looks like in the future. And we did a lot of co-creation, gathering their ideas, their insights. What did they want to see out of this space, out of this place?
Let me just talk about that event, and I think it's like deeper listening. I mean, why Project for Public Spaces was just a great partner for you, and just to reel it back a bit, we looked at we did this community tour, very small community, but you looked at the major, they had a building, right? Which was the major building where they had all their meetings, and it desperately needed to be repaired, right? Then you they had this great vision for like new athletic fields, which truly would help out. And then they had the learning center. And I think that what struck me so much about you and your team was that you really listened. You and then you had employees as part of that. I mean, the authenticity, Andy, of what GAF did and the process is just such a key learning for any company, whether you're a B2C or a B2B, and any B2B can do this. So that struck me as just amazing. When you finally decided on the learning center, and then you had that event had, you know, oh my God, are people going to come? It's like 5 or 6 at night. And you had like, you know, you wanted to ask them for feedback for ideas. And that's part of the genius of Project for Public Spaces. It's real co-creation. There were hundreds of people showed up. And we, you know, there was music and there was food. And then there was, you know, the kids could draw certain things. And it was so real. And I really want our listeners to understand that you don't have to do the largest, most gigantic project. It can be so micro focused, but truly have an impact on the business. And so I just wanted to share that because you're going to, and then COVID hit.
Yeah, then COVID hit.
So let's just talk a little bit about that because you were ready to build. I think you had plans and then COVID hit. So what did you do to deal with that? And you're about to finally unveil it, but you had to wait 2 years.
Yeah, I think it was February of 2020 when our friend David Franz and myself were in front of the Shafter City Council presenting the plans, the blueprints, and then of course March 2020 happens, and then the rest is history. But yeah, so we had to shelve the project for some time. There was obviously the early stages of the pandemic. We all know what that meant in terms of lockdowns and uncertainty. And then the roofing industry, our business, kept going and going and going throughout the pandemic. It was everything to keep our operations running. So we had to kind of slow things down a little bit, but without ever, forgetting our commitment, to finish this project. And we put the shovel on the ground about five or six months ago, to put some of the key infrastructure pieces into place, and starting at the end of, in the middle of March, we're going to be having one more round of volunteer days where we'll be laying down some really fun GAF pavement coatings to
right.
To put the final touches on the place and make it a wonderful, safe, just a fun place for kids and their families to come and learn. And so we'll be cutting a ribbon here shortly. And so that, again, another community moment where we get to participate, which is tremendously rewarding. And then I think what's really exciting about this particular project is that it doesn't end there, right? Because we'll be engaged and partnered with the Learning Center over time to bring programming into this facility and into this space. So we're invested in the long term in this particular project. And to your point, it's not the biggest project in the world, but we think it's as meaningful as anything we could have done in this particular community. And the satisfaction that our team, not my team, but I mean the GAF team broadly, got out of being a part of it, I think is truly immense and rewarding. And you said it well. It's the authenticity of the project, right? It's the fact that there wasn't a blueprint. We didn't come in with the box that we were going to install in the middle of the city. It was about what's the real need and how do we co-create it with the community that we're trying to serve. I'll take that insight to every project that I do, from here to the end of time. So I think it was an instrumental learning in what we did.
It's, it's truly your values in action. It is. And, I know that there were some pre-events, working with your employees, and they were so excited. It was so different than anything that they did on their jobs. So we're going to add some links to Shafter and the visuals in our show notes so that people can take a look at that. And I'm glad you're going to add more programming and such. So COVID hit. How did you make sure that after 2 years that it was going to happen?
It wasn't a decision. We had committed to getting it done, and it wasn't a matter of if, it was just a matter of when. And frankly, you know, it wasn't just GAF and our business that had an impact on that. I mean, I think, you know, Shafter also, its priorities, right, had to shift as a community during COVID.
How are you going to share? What are your plans? I mean, obviously, you've got the local community, your local employees, but do you have any special plans to share with the entire country of your GAF employees and your other plants, how they'll connect to Shafter in any way?
Yeah, we'll certainly pull out all of our communications machinery and make sure we share our story across our great platforms so that everyone can feel, you know, part of it. And we've been using that example to engage and bring in other, you know, GAF communities into the fold, and have already started, you know, working with some really inspired plant leadership who see the value and see the opportunity and are gonna lean in. And then we're also looking at different ways, you know, that we can bring scale to our Community Matters program. And I think what you'll see from us, you know, in 2022 is really focused efforts, especially in communities that have the biggest need when it comes to, you know, resilient design and resilient thinking. You know, places that we've seen get hit hard over and over again, you know, through natural disasters, economic disasters, you know, and so, you know, we'll be looking to sort of put some scale behind, you know, what we learned in Shafter. I'm hopeful that will be a story that we'll be able to bring to the masses as well. So more to come from us on that.
More to come. I'd love to try and pull a little bit more out about resiliency, because as we have seen, not just resiliency with our health and COVID, but the amount of climate disasters, the amount of tornadoes, the amount of fires. Yes, you are in the resiliency business. Again, protect what matters most. Can you share, without giving away any trade secrets, how you're going to be advancing this whole concept of resiliency, especially related to Community Matters?
I should have said, you know, at the very beginning of this conversation, that everything that we do with the support of a network of great partners, right? This is our 10th, you know, year anniversary in partnership with Habitat for Humanity nationally. You know, we have a fantastic partnership with Good 360, which is a national nonprofit that helps provide donated goods to a network of nonprofit organizations in the communities where they need them, when the goods are needed and when they're needed most. You know, we've expanded our network. We're working, you know, with Rebuilding Together in many communities across the country. We're in the Gulf region. We're working with SBP, which is another fantastic disaster response organization. And Team Rubicon is a longtime partner of ours and a wonderful organization. And with each of these organizations, as their missions evolve and grow, you know, they're all looking at, you know, the concept of build back better. They're not, you know, no one is just looking to put blue tarps on roofs into home and say, okay, they're dry, we can go on to the next thing, right? It's about helping a community build back better. And so you know, that's what we've been looking to, you know, to in cases where we can influence other organizations to think about resilience, you know, these organizations to think about resiliency, where we can educate, you know, provide our teams who are expert in this area to educate them on how to build better roofing systems, more resilient roofing systems. We're doing that, but we're aligning with organizations that have religion when it comes to resiliency, and we're hitching our star to their wagons as well. And so, when it comes to disaster response and resiliency, We used to operate a facility in Mobile, Alabama. It's no longer manufacturing. We're no longer manufacturing there, but we did have a warehouse, a 60,000 square foot warehouse on the site there that we still own. And last year we worked together to donate that space to Good360. And now they have a regional redistribution center in the Gulf region where the products are needed most, you know, within a couple hours drive of most of the most highly impacted areas throughout the Gulf region. And so, you know, just another way of building resiliency by thinking ahead, planning ahead for those, for the next disaster.
Yeah. Also using resources that aren't just cash.
That's right.
That 60,000 square foot warehouse is a big, big deal.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's so well positioned to serve them, their mission and which is now our mission.
You mentioned a handful of really powerful partners. So, and you've developed and deepened your relationship with them over the years. I'd love for you to share with our listeners, what are your secrets to success, to having really good and impactful partnerships versus just writing a check and walking away?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think the secret to a good, you know, partnership is the collaboration. It's about the listening, but it's about, you know, when setting up the parameters and the expectations in the relationship, and it is a relationship. When you're setting it up, you know, make sure that your partners, you know that you expect to be part of a conversation, not just called upon when a check needs to be written. And so, that's where we've had such great partnerships. You know, again, that have lasted now, you know, more than a decade in the Habitat example, where it's about how do we collaborate to design programs? How do we collaborate to think about where, you know, our participation can have the biggest impact, and make that part of the expectations up front that you're going to be that you're buying into a partnership, not into a you're not just interested in getting the logo for your website.
There you go. That's really cool. We unfortunately are getting down to the end of this great conversation, but I always like to ask, what do you know? What have you learned now that you didn't know 4 or 5 or 6 years ago that, you know, you would have said, hey, to my younger self, you know, hey, younger self, you should have this sort of wisdom to make the community matters, to make your values coming to life, to make your social impact work even more impactful?
You know, I think in the beginning, I think that I thought we had to have all of the, you know, the answers up from the start.
Good one.
We had, and I realized very quickly, and I think this conversation, I think, alluded to it, I don't know, at multiple points, Carol. You know, I think, you know, being able to, you know, just getting comfortable with getting out of the starting gates, right?
Mm-hmm.
And starting to put, you know, points on the board for the communities that you're trying to serve, and then evolve and grow and shape from there. You know, let the experience guide you. Don't feel like you have to, you know, have a blueprint for success from day one, because it's not realistic, and it's not going to get you to the best outcome.
That's a great insight. Regarding your senior executives, your senior team that, you know, you've got, whether it's a chief information officer, it could be a supply chain officer, it can be commercial officer. How have you seen their knowledge and leaning into community engagement change over time? Because I remember we did our interviews and Jim got it, but some of his other colleagues were like, I don't know yet. So what if you see how the light bulb went off for them?
Yeah, I would challenge the notion that there was you know, reluctance among any of them. We have a great leadership team, to be honest, and they've all, I think, got it from a very early stage that this program could have, and no matter where they sat in the organization, whether their stakeholders were, you know, people, you know, our people or our customers or our vendors and suppliers, you know, they they've all, you know, embraced and been very supportive, you know, very, very early on. And, but I think the most meaningful and the most obvious place where you know, leaders have been able to engage and see the real value is when they see their teams connecting and engaging and participating. And so, you know, we've had, you know, volunteerism is a big part of everything that we do, employee volunteerism. And so that's been a great, you know, place to get all of our leaders, you know, directly involved. And it's also, you know, those volunteer opportunities that we're able to facilitate, you know, for our employees, those are great opportunities to sort of share more about the mission of Community Matters more broadly. And then it just, you know, so it compounds on itself, right? And it brings people into the programs in different ways. And then you find, then ultimately, now you're creating networks of people who are committed not only to the volunteer days, but when disaster strikes and we're trying to come up with a creative solution for a community, you've got great supply chain partners who are like, oh, I know how we can get, you know, what you need to this community on this date using this truck from this location and this person to load it. And then blah, 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 blah. You know, you start to really create deeper levels of engagement in what we're trying to do. And you know, the coolest thing about our, I think our jobs is, I think when you feel like you've reached a certain level of success, when you basically turn the keys over to the employees, right? I mean, it's not about anything that we're doing. It's about what the employees, how the employees are engaging and connecting and you know, making it all happen.
That's what I love, that vision, turning the keys over to them and trusting them and letting them just do it. You know, we have so many of our clients who say, I don't know how to get our purpose down to the manufacturing floor. You know, you've got what, is it 26 plants?
30 plants and 26 locations. Yeah.
So you've got a lot, and you got a lot of people in manufacturing. How do you, besides, we know what you did in Shafter, you had some meetings, you brought them in, but how about any other things that you do to bring this down to localize in local communities, whether it's a Habitat House or disaster relief or such?
I'd be lying if I said it's not the constant challenge, right? It is the constant challenge in this work when you're in a manufacturing environment with a large hourly, you know, employee population. You know, it's a consistent, you know, effort to come up with new and different ideas. However, I think the best starting place for us, in addition to the direct engagement that you described, when we're talking about specific projects that we're trying to execute, but at a broader, you know, more scalable level, you know, programs like, you know, company match and volunteer time off are essential to starting the conversation with a distributed hourly workforce. And, you know, for us, it's about providing opportunity and having the organization stand behind our employees, you know, wishing to support organizations that matter to them, right? It's not about the organizations that matter to our program and the partners that we talked about earlier. What's the organization that's most important to me, and how can I get involved? Whether that's, you know, being afforded the opportunity to step away from the line for 4 hours to go do X, Y, or Z activity, or, you know, to have my $20, you know, gift doubled for the organization. To us, that was, I think that's where we've seen the most traction, but we have a long way to go.
Do you have a formal time off policy for your employees?
We do.
And what is it?
It is every employee in the company has 16 hours of paid time off.
And that's generous. That's really great. And then, okay, so people listening and go, yeah, well, that's okay for like desk people, but for someone on a line. So I'm assuming, how does it work when it's in manufacturing? They have to work with their supervisor, get the time off, et cetera.
That's right. It's maybe it's a theme throughout this entire conversation. But there's, you know, it's a little bit different in every place depending on the dynamics of the facility and the plant and the operation. But we try very hard to make it easy for folks to get out and volunteer. You know, not going to lie, things like COVID and when manufacturing is running as hard and as fast as it is now, because given the work demand is, these things get harder and harder to do, and you have to get more and more creative about how you engage. And so, for example, this year, one of the projects that we did to be able to sustain, you know, the level of volunteerism, we actually brought the projects into the plants. And so, back in November, you know, we sent out 5,000 kits out into the plants where our employees were asked to sew blankets that were then redistributed through Good 360 into communities where, following disaster where, you know, blankets are certainly needed most. And we were able to, create little micro moments for volunteerism. It took, you know, half an hour, not 4 hours, but it gave people an opportunity to connect and participate.
That's really wise. So the micro volunteering. So we, unfortunately, I do have to end this now, but I always like to give my guest the last word. It's been a great conversation, and I really appreciate your candor in terms of the depth at which you approach community matters. So what's the last word, Andy Hilton?
I'm grateful and I'm lucky to be in an organization where the employee population from top to bottom has embraced what we're trying to do in our communities. It doesn't take a lot to get the ball rolling in this space. And if you get it pointed in the right direction, you know, the impact and the scale, can be tremendous. Not only rewarding to the team that's sort of, you know, helping to get that ball rolling down the hill, but to everyone who kind of gets swept up in it as it careens down and is making an impact every day and in every community where we operate. I'm grateful that to have the opportunity that I have to be part of this team and I'm glad to be able to share, you know, some of what we've learned, you know, with your listeners today and grateful, Carol, again, for our long partnership to get together and the opportunity to speak with you today has been fabulous. A lot of fun.
Well, I appreciate it, Andy. And, being part of it, so being on the ground with you and the authenticity again, that to me today is so, so important because companies are being called out left and right for doing disingenuous things. And GAF is truly a great story that people just don't know enough about, and about your, you know, storied career in terms of helping organizations to truly get in touch with their values and to truly put them into action. I can't wait to hear about the big Shafter unveiling, because I know it's happening soon. And we, again, will share some of those links with our listeners. And I just want to end with a couple points for our listeners, which is if you've liked what you hear, and I hope you do, please go to where you listen, iTunes or other places, Spotify, and please give us 5 stars so we can rise in the pantheon of business podcasts. The other thing is that we just released our Purpose 360 second edition ebook. So it is a really quick bite sizable. It's 25 podcasts with direct links. It's really easy. Go download it, share it with your colleagues, because we need everybody to be like Andy Hilton. We want them to be thoughtful. We want them to be strategic and to truly know how you build up and through and down in terms of community impact. And then when you do that and you create a community matters from the master purpose of a company, protect what matters, you will have a powerful answer to my question, what is the power of your purpose? Thank you so much, Andy, for being on the show, and good luck with all the additional work that you're doing, because it's really, really important.
Thank you, Carol, and thank you for the opportunity to share today. It's been fantastic.